are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, December 13th. Yeesh. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the House Judiciary Committee passes two articles of impeachment. It is the third time in history, I believe, we've gotten this far in the process. Also on the program today, sadly, across the pond, as it were, Boris Johnson and the Tories win big. Corbyn to step down, Brexit in the offing. Meanwhile, the House passes a bill requiring drug price negotiations for some Medicare drugs. And more. Also, the Democrats ask the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, to examine the USDA relocation of two research agencies. And a whistleblower reveals that ICE's gross negligence led to four deaths. The DNC announces four new debates in the first 2 months of 2020. Biden's firewall in South Carolina looks like it may be penetrable. Illinois to sue e-cigarette maker Juul. And mostly, not only do we have impeachment, but what a week for mostly crappy legislation to pass. All this and more on today's program. Folks, you can imagine, I imagine, that a little bit crazy around here. I've been doing this for, 15 years and 15 and a half, to be exact. 15 and 9/16ths, to be exact. Yeah.
What are you doing out of 16ths?
Huh?
What are you doing out of 16ths?
Well, it's a little bit more than a half.
Okay.
So, and Brendan asked me, he's like, has there ever been a time like this? And the answer is no. And it's most of the people who I know who are in this business are being driven crazy. I'm not looking for sympathy. There's times where everybody's jobs are hard, but, I just know that, this is as much as you feel it. It's real. Let me put it that way. You are not imagining anything. And part of the reason why there's so much going on now, right now, I don't think is a coincidence. Yesterday, the House Judiciary Committee was working on what they call the markup of the articles of impeachment that ostensibly, if they passed, the Judiciary Committee would go to the full floor of the House. Basically, what it is, people are offering amendments, and then they vote on all the amendments, they strike it down, they basically get to, through a process, to write the, in this instance, the Articles of Impeachment, functionally a bill. And the Republicans were trying to add amendments that would narrow and mitigate the impeachment. Democrats were writing ones that would expand it and whatnot. In the end, this went on for 14 hours yesterday. Because it started at 9 a.m. and around 11 o'clock at night last night, Republicans were anticipating taking a vote. And you know what they would be saying right now. They took a vote in the middle of the night to perform a coup against this president. And to the credit of the Democrats, Jerry Nadler just out of the blue said, okay, we're about to take a vote. Recess. Let's do this in the morning. Which, I think was both politically and civically appropriate. You shouldn't have a vote to impeach a president or pass articles of impeachment to the House at 11:30 at night. You should do it at a time where people can watch, the news can digest it and whatnot. And that's what they did. Republicans were furious because they had all of their narratives are like done in the dead of the night. They probably had charts. They probably had graphics that they had already made. And they were pissed about that because printing costs can really go through the roof, particularly if it's like a multicolored thing. Anyways, here is the vote on the abuse of power. They had two votes this morning. They convened at 10 a.m. We did it live. It lasted about 15, 20 minutes, maybe. They voted on two articles of impeachment. One is abuse of power. One is obstruction of Congress. Let's just play the first one because this is, like I say, fairly historic. You will also watch Louis Gohmert do a little grandstanding, which is always fun.
The question now is on Article 1 of the resolution, impeaching President Donald J. Trump for abusing his powers. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Nadler?
Aye.
Mr. Nadler votes aye. Ms. Lofgren?
Aye.
Ms. Lofgren votes aye. Ms. Jackson Lee?
Aye.
Ms. Jackson Lee votes aye. Mr. Cohen?
Aye.
Mr. Cohen votes aye. Mr. Johnson of Georgia?
Aye.
Mr. Johnson of Georgia votes aye. Mr. Deutsch?
Aye.
Mr. Deutsch votes aye. Ms. Bass?
Aye.
Ms. Bass votes aye. Mr. Richmond?
Yes.
Mr. Richmond votes yes. Mr. Jeffries?
Aye.
Mr. Jeffries votes aye. Mr. Cicilline?
Aye.
Mr. Cicilline votes aye. Mr. Swalwell?
Aye.
Mr. Swalwell votes aye. Mr. Liu? Mr. Raskin?
Aye.
Mr. Raskin votes aye. Ms. Jayapal?
Aye.
Ms. Jayapal votes aye. Ms. Demings?
Aye.
Ms. Demings votes aye. Mr. Correa?
Yes.
Mr. Correa votes yes. Ms. Scanlon?
Aye.
Ms. Scanlon votes aye. Ms. Garcia?
Aye.
Ms. Garcia votes aye. Mr. Neguse?
Aye.
Mr. Neguse votes aye. Ms. McBath?
Aye.
Ms. McBath votes aye. Mr. Stanton?
Aye.
Mr. Stanton votes aye. Ms. Dean?
Aye.
Ms. Dean votes aye. Ms. McCarsel-Powell?
Aye.
Ms. McCarsel-Powell votes aye. Ms. Escobar?
Aye.
Ms. Escobar votes aye. Mr. Collins?
No.
Mr. Collins votes no. Mr. Sensenbrenner?
No.
Mr. Sensenbrenner votes no. Mr. Shabbat?
No.
Mr. Shabbat votes no. Mr. Gohmert?
My vote is no.
Mr. Gohmert votes no. Mr. Jordan?
No.
Mr. Jordan votes no. Mr. Buck?
No.
Mr. Buck votes no. Mr. Radcliffe?
No.
Mr. Radcliffe votes no. Ms. Roby?
No.
Ms. Roby votes no.
Ms. Roby,
Mr. Gates?
I think
no.
Brought her grandson
no.
in, or maybe
Mr.
Gates
Johnson
did.
Mr. Johnson of Louisiana?
No.
Mr. Johnson of Louisiana votes no. Mr. Biggs?
No.
Mr. Biggs votes no. Mr. McClintock?
No.
Mr. McClintock votes no. Ms. Lesko?
No.
Ms. Lesko votes no. Mr. Reschenthaler?
No.
Mr. Reschenthaler votes no. Mr. Klein?
No.
Mr. Klein votes no. Mr. Armstrong?
No.
Mr. Armstrong votes no. Mr. Stubbe?
No.
Mr. Stubbe votes no.
Has every member voted who wishes to vote?
Mr. Clerk, Chairman, may I ask how I'm recorded?
How is the gentleman recorded?
Mr. Gohmert, you are recorded as no.
Yeah, I want to make sure.
Clerk will report.
There you go. And the 23 to 17, there's Gohmert. I just want to make sure that I'm the last person.
Yeah, because he didn't say it loud enough the first time.
Right. Yeah, and he can't count his colleagues.
Right, exactly.
Those first few really use the same tone of voice you use when, like, your pet jumps up on the furniture or something. Like, no.
Well, I mean, look, this is a piece of history, and they also are all trying to be the, you know, they're all, this is, there's a lot of theater to this, of course, as there is with all politics. And they are playing to a specific audience, and they each, you know, Sensenbrenner's trying his, like, I'm just sick of this thing. Look. And they're all also, I think, genuinely bummed that this happened in the daytime. Because it really did cut into, like, how disgusting is it that they had this vote at 10 a.m. Right in the fun part of the Today Show. But there it is. This will move to the House for a full vote. And, of course, there was a second vote, similar results, 23 to 17. The only other thing that I was struck by when you see this vote, the incredible, I mean, everyone knows this, but it's just sort of weird to see it laid out like this. The incredible lack of diversity that exists in the Republican Party. It is really just ranges from, you know, bald, old, white guy to, like, they're, you know, to younger white guy, to fat white guy, to skinny white guy. And then, to be fair, I think there were two white women on the judiciary for the Republicans. So that's a step in the right direction for them.
Progress.
But when you compare it to the Democratic side, it's stunning. It really is. I mean, you understand everything you need to know, I think, about politics, at least in Washington, and in terms of just the political parties, in terms of the major dynamic, which is not to say that dynamic is helpful, but it is the case that they are a white party, and perhaps just a white male party on some level as well. There it is. Impeachment will go forward. Meanwhile, and we will get to this. Michael's out sick today. So we probably won't be talking about the UK elections as we might have been, but we will play some clips of it. Obviously, a really devastating loss for Labour in the UK. I think they will have less seats in Parliament since the 80s. I'm not 100% sure on that. I don't know if we've got the final numbers, and it's a little bit better than when we saw the exit polling, but depressing. And we have some clips, I think, to the extent that I can really understand this stuff from, you know, from afar. You know, part of it comes down to, I think, Jeremy Corbyn was not personally popular. The platform of the Labour Party was certainly more popular than he was. And I think there was also this is just my sense, and I'm not, you know, I don't even know if I could take a position on this, but that there was a very difficult landscape for Labour to navigate between the Leave and Remain factions of Brexit.
Yeah, entirely.
I mean, this is a country that voted for Brexit, so I'm not surprised at the results in this.
I understand why people wanted to remain. I think logically that was the right choice, but politically it looks like maybe you needed to go one way or the other, and you probably should have just done a left Brexit. I don't know. Maybe we'll talk more about this, but
yeah, I mean, it's hard to know. What the solution would have been. Perhaps it would have been to
if he was decisive either way, he would have lost a whole bunch of people, I think. And they lost a lot of Brexiters, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, there is... the final results, as far as I can tell, that these are the final results. Conservatives, 365 seats. Labour Party, 203. The SNP, 48. And Liberal Democrats, 11. And I don't know. I don't know if you choose a position on Brexit 2 years ago and then you just start trying to figure out a plan B with the people that you're going to lose because you've made a hard decision. I don't know. I really don't have a sense of that. Well, I'll read some stuff that we got from listeners and we'll take some calls. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to be talking to Cenk Uygur. Not just as a political commentator today, but as a candidate running in Katie Hill's district in California. And it is on a day where they have seemed to have opened the floodgates of the Oppo research against Cenk. And Bernie Sanders has endorsed Cenk. I'm looking at like politics right now. He is trending on Twitter.
For what it's worth.
For what it's worth. All right. We will take a quick break in a minute. Let me just tell you this. Support for today's show comes from Mova Globes, ladies and gentlemen. Mova Globes, I'm holding one right here in my hand. As you know, they turn all on their own, with or without a base. I happen to have a base, but now I'm holding it in my hand. And they do so via ambient lighting. I don't know why. It's supposedly magnet technology. No batteries are needed. There's no cords, nothing like that. It's hidden magnets, apparently, that do it. And they have over 40 different designs. This one I'm holding here is what the Earth looks like from space. You know, on a semi-cloudy day, I guess. I don't know how that works. I've never been to space. But they also have other planets. Mars, Uranus, which is Sol's favorite planet. They have famous artwork on globes. They have maps, antique maps. Captain John Cook's travels around the world. Some of the maps don't include what the maps include today because we didn't know about it then. So it's a great way to obviously learn about our natural science and history.
50 years' time, you might be able to remember what Antarctica looked like too.
Exactly. They may have to redo the maps without it. Makes for a great gift, both for kids and for adults. I have two of them on my desk, and they're sort of hypnotic. Now I'm sort of afraid to let them go. And I was supposed to give one to Saul. That's what I got the other one for, and now I still haven't done it. But now's the time, folks. It's the holiday season, and our listeners can get 15% off your purchase when you visit MovaGlobes.com/majority. Use the code majority. This is their biggest deal of the year. It's only valid for a limited time. Head over to Mova, M-O-V-A, globes.com/majority. Use the code majority for 15% off your purchase. Folks, I started today's show talking about how much news there was and how overwhelming it is. And one of the things that make it so overwhelming, I think, for people who are not reading the news professionally is we have five major corporations that own, you know, the vast majority amount of mass media. We have others that, well, across the board, they all have their agendas. And sometimes it's hard to discern what those agendas are. Well, one of today's sponsors is News Voice, and it's the first ever entirely open, crowdsourced, and democratized platform for news. You can download the app for free at newsvoice.com/majority. News Voice, by aggregating from so many different sources, allows you to see some of these implicit biases. News Voice is a free crowdsourced website and mobile app that lets you create personalized news feeds and maintain a clear picture of where your news is coming from and what political slants may exist. It helps you aggregate news from corporate outlets, international outlets, local news, and independent media, giving you access to every side of every story. News Voice is fueled by its community of users who contribute to the platform by fact-checking, submitting stories and sources that are missing, upvoting stories, and writing story summaries. You can also comment on stories and debate politics with other members of the community. And through staying active in the community, you can level up and earn perks on the platform. The News Voice Play feature lets you listen to your personal news feed every day through customizable audio news playlists. It's your own personally tailored radio station for news. News Voice is a next generation news aggregator and social media platform that values transparency, good journalism, and productive political discussions. Get totally free access by going to newsvoice.com/majority. Put a link underneath this video if you're watching on YouTube. I've got one in the podcast description as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Cenk Uygur. All right, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the show someone you know as a commentator, as the founder of the Young Turks, as the CEO of the Young Turks, the biggest online news organization in the world. But also now you may know him as a candidate for California's 25th congressional district. Cenk Uygur, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Sam. I appreciate it, brother.
Now, listen, I know you're in a car. Obviously, you're rather busy these days trying to run for this office, this seat in the special election. When is the actual election? This is the seat that was vacated by Katie Hill when she was basically attacked by her ex-husband. And resigned. When is the election?
So the primary is March 3rd. So that's a hell of a day. That's Super Tuesday. That's also obviously when the presidential primary in California is. If you get over 50%, you win immediately. If you get in the top two and nobody gets 50%, you go to the general election for this seat is on May 12th.
Okay.
And now it gets complicated because then, of course, you rerun in November for the two-year seat.
All right, fair enough. So there's a lot of scrambling, and you are well situated. You don't live in the district; you've moved into the district. Is that right? Is that my understanding?
Yeah, I'm a little bit outside the district, and I'm moving in at the end of the school year with the kids.
Okay, so you are well suited to run in a special election because you obviously already have like a built-in base. You have support from small donors, and to that extent, you really represent a big threat to the establishment Democrats who want to put someone in this seat who is not as progressive as you. I mean, that seems to me to be like that's just like the baseline. Before you get to anything else, that's the reality of what's going on in this election.
100%. But there's two layers to it, and you're right. You know, I've gotten 17,000 individual contributions, but we need a hell of a lot more because the millions are coming against us because of what I say about corporate power and the Democratic Party. So jank2020.com is the website, jank2020.com. It's so important because all I got is you guys. Okay, now the two layers are, one is, this is my opponent is as establishment corporate Democrat as it gets. In California, she's in the state assembly, and you could take direct contributions from corporations, and she has. Her average donation is $2,700 so far this year, minus 28 bucks.
Wow.
So she's taking money from insurance companies, and you're going to be shocked to find out, Sam, that she's against Medicare for All.
What?
I'm sure those two things are not at all connected. I mean, she's just taking insurance company money because they love to do charity, and they just happen to give it to someone who matches with their financial interests. But all that is a wild coincidence, as it is for every corporate Democrat that takes that money. So there's that normal, like, she's against Medicare for All, Green New Deal, doesn't care about money in politics, in fact, loves money in politics, et cetera, right? And then there's a second layer to it, which is that I'm calling out the entire Democratic leadership and saying, yeah, if you take corporate contributions, you are corrupt and you are taking bribes. So now it's full-out war because now they're sending in every group that they have ever been connected to say that before the election happens, we should disqualify Cenk because we, the powerful and the elite, don't like him. Well, that's not how it works. So sad day. I'm coming either way.
All right. I want to talk about that because it does feel like somebody just dumped a dump truck of oppo they've been building on you today. That, I mean, largely, frankly, is a rehash of stuff, and it's all stuff that is, you know, is public. So it's sort of it's, you know, they're doing their best. But I just want to talk a little bit about this dynamic because it seems to me now that when we talk about getting corporate money, I am sure that the vast majority of these people who vote with corporations and against the best interests of average people would do that on their own. And even if they didn't get that corporate money, my sense is they get that money because they're the type of people to vote against those interests. The problem is they wouldn't be in office because they wouldn't be able to garner the type of support you need from a broad base of people offering what they're offering. I mean, that's where it seems to me is the dysfunction, that I don't know that these people are changing their behavior as elected representatives because of the support they get from corporations. But without that support from corporations, they wouldn't be able to get support from the general electorate because they wouldn't be able to, they wouldn't get the money that they need to run. Everybody needs some amount of money to run anyways. And they wouldn't get the volunteers because their agenda just isn't helpful to people.
Yeah. Well, there's two elements to that too. So, number one, as Professor Larry Lessig says, they lean to the green. So although now running, I actually think that they're a little bit more comic book evil than I realized, than even I realized. I assume that they just go, I mean, I am getting money from them. And I think I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, right. So that's how I thought it was. Now, having experienced it a little bit personally, No, I think it's actually way more brazen than that. I think they're just like, give me the money and I'll vote your way. Dude, what do you need me to vote? Got it. Just give me the money, right? So I've seen it. But there's another layer to it, too. Sam, even if you're right, so Sheldon Adelson gave millions of dollars to a bunch of Republicans and said, I need you to say that gambling online is immoral, but gambling at my casinos in person is the most wonderful family values thing you can do. Now, was there one or five people out of the 330 million people in the country that actually believe that? Maybe, right?
Well, yeah, and I mean, so, it's nice to spend time with family and not be so isolated, but
right. So
while you
but those five guys raise their hands and go, yeah, I think gambling right. online is immoral, but gambling in the casinos are the best thing you could do. They go, oh, okay, we found the five guys who agree with us. Give them $30 million. Okay, and that really doesn't make it any better at all, even in that best case scenario.
Right. All right. Well, fair enough. And this is one of the things, obviously, that you're fighting for, and this is why it's such a big threat. And I have to say, like, it is quite clear the size of a threat that you represent to them when you open up your hometown paper and you see that you are attacked. For stuff like that, we said you dealt with, it seems to me, years ago. I know that Cernovich tried to get you on a lot of this stuff. You tell folks what it is exactly that you're being accused of.
Yeah. So there's two layers to that, too. One is the old blogs that I deleted 15 years ago. Not when I was running for office, not when I got caught. I didn't, right? I deleted them on my own because I didn't agree with them. They find it, Cernovich and the alt-right find it on the Wayback Machine on things that have been deleted from the internet. They put it out there and they did that line of attack. So if you've never seen those blogs and you see that from when I was trying to be politically incorrect Republican, I 100% apologize. And one very sincere form of that apology was deleting all that stuff 15 years ago. So anyone who watches the show knows that's not me at all, right? In fact, they hate me for being too progressive. How disingenuous is it for them to pretend that I'm not progressive enough? Preposterous. It's obviously not the real issue. So you deal with that, but the press loves it. I was talking to LA Times yesterday, and that reporter said, no, I don't want to talk about the issues. I only want to talk about this. Well, okay. Well, that's at least clear. And so, because they have access to all these politicians, and the politicians don't want to talk about Medicare for All. They don't want to talk about Green New Deal because the Democrats aren't going to do it. Newsflash, Democratic leadership hates Medicare for All,
right.
Hates Green New Deal. They will never, ever do it unless you defeat them. The way to defeat them is exactly this election. Exactly. Because if you send people a message saying, I don't give a damn what character assassinations you guys do. We said Medicare for All. We said get money out of politics. We said Green New Deal, and we didn't stutter. Okay. So if they throw all this stuff at me and it doesn't work and I win anyway, oh my God, that's going to be a cannon shot straight across the heads of Washington, D.C. So jenk2020.com. I'm not kidding. This is everything. Now, the second layer of it is they are now trying to find videos from Young Turks, and they are stretching and stretching. So the number one thing they're going to is I had David Duke on, and I shredded him. Sam, nobody can relate to this more than you because you invite right-wing monsters to debate you. They usually run. In this case, Duke came on, and I beat back every garbage, anti-Semitic, racist thing he said. Now, not only disingenuous political hacks in the Democratic Party, but also corporate media hacks are pretending, and CNN literally wrote, that I invited him on the show to share his anti-Semitic views. Well, Jesus Christ, if that's not a 100% lie, what is?
I mean, CNN has done the exact same thing with, I'm sure, far less pushback on guests like this.
Are you kidding me? Anybody who watches that interview, David Duke has never gotten that kind of pushback. Compare anything I've done with David Duke to what CNN has done, you'll see I'm 1,000 times harsher. 1,000 times. And then they turn around and pretend as if I'm on his side. It's gross. It's negligent. It's horrible. And so that's the now the character assassination that they're in the middle of. And all the meanwhile, have they mentioned CNN and all of them? Have they ever written one article about how corporate campaign contributions might be bribes? How maybe ExxonMobil doesn't have the country's best interests in mind, that they just like to maximize profit? Isn't it stunning that they've never written a single article about that? It's unbelievable. Yeah.
That's just
covering for the elite.
Right now we have a still shot of Michael Smirkanish's recent interview with David Duke. There's no doubt in my mind that I haven't watched the Smirkanish one, but there's no doubt in my mind that you were far more aggressive with David Duke on this stuff. And I have to say that when you look at this, and of course, they're going to pull stuff. If people want to pull stuff from this show, over the course of the 15 years I've been doing this, and I know you've been doing your show, you know, close, I think, to 18 years, they're going to find stuff that, particularly in narrow context, are going to sound frivolous or stupid or, you know, and I'm sure they're going to go through your entire oeuvre. But if what they're doing is trying to say that you're David Duke friendly, this is... they're scared. And so give me a sense of the 25th district. I mean, what does it look like? I mean, because the irony here is, too, is that the first thing I heard was like, Cenk's too progressive for that district. And that's really that's bad news. He can't win there. They obviously don't believe that if they're trying to make you look like you are some type of reactionary.
Yeah, what scared them is how much money I raised. And so they're not scared of me as much as they're scared of all of you guys listening. So every time you give me money, they get more scared and attack me more. Good. Screw them. Cenk2020.com. and so that's why they're throwing the kitchen sink at me. And this, Sam, what you're touching on is so important, because the BS mythology of corporate Democrats is, in purple districts, the voters love big corporate power. And so if you appease the Republicans and you appease corporate power, you're more likely to win. I mean, how do they say this stuff with a straight face? It's preposterous. And if it was true, well, we could ask Claire McCaskill and Joe Donnelly if it's true.
Right.
Oh, right. They're retired because they tried that strategy and they were miserable failures. So when my message is, end the corruption, let's get higher wages. The Antelope Valley is a high desert. It's perfect for solar power. It's perfect for wind power. It's higher paying jobs. It reduces traffic if you bring the jobs to that area. The Antelope Valley is completely ignored by the Democratic Party power structure. Why? And I found this out while I was running. I'm like, wait, the Antelope Valley has more Democratic voters. So why don't they come here more often? They almost never come here. It turns out it's because some people in the area are, and especially Latinos in their mind, the Democratic Party's mind, are too poor. So they can't do fundraising there. Oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, how monstrous are these guys? So, and they focus on, the whole district's beautiful. Half of it is rural. It feels rural. It's high desert, but there's also a lot of good jobs there as well. The southern half is very suburban, Santa Clarita, Porter Ranch, Simi Valley. So are there a lot of cops in Simi Valley? Yes. Am I going to change any of my opinions about Black Lives Matter or anything like that? No. So we're going to find out in this district if people appreciate someone who's honest, as opposed to a normal, slimy politician who equivocates on every single issue. We're going to find out if they want Medicare for all and if they want a progressive fighter, or if they want someone lukewarm who's not going to do any of that for them and is just going to take orders from Nancy Pelosi. I don't care what they say, what they do. They're never going to dissuade me. I'm going to fight all the way to the end. And if I beat them, God help them. They right. won't be able to stop me in the House. God help them.
When Katie Hill won, what happened in the primary? Was it one of these two Democrats race, or is she running against a Republican, or did she defeat an incumbent?
So in this district, there's always, and in this case, there's like 13 people in the race, half of them Democrats, half of them Republicans. And the Republicans are splitting up the vote in a lot of different ways. There's the former incumbent, Steve Knight. There's this guy, Mike Garcia, who's backed by a lot of the Republican Party. He's a Latino who loves Trump and wants to tell everybody how great Trump is. So he's getting a lot of the Republican vote. They're like, oh, a Latino that's telling us how great we are and how wonderful our racism is. So they love that. And then you got Papadopoulos in the race. So they're splitting up their vote like crazy, and a bunch of other people. On our side, there's two major candidates, me and the establishment candidate. So it is very, very likely and happens almost every time that a Republican and a Democrat advance in the jungle primary. So if I'm up against Steve Knight, they could try all this stuff all they like. This guy votes with Trump 99% of the time. This district voted for Hillary Clinton by 7 points.
Wow.
And now has trended more Democratic. Ain't no 7-point advantage Hillary Clinton district. I was going to vote for a guy who voted with Trump 99% of the time. It's just not going to happen. I would obliterate him in the general election. The most important thing is to not buy into the BS hype of you must go corporate and you must not fight for your voters if you want to win in a purple district. It's the wrong idea. And the fight's in the 25th. This is where we have to end that mythology.
All right. Well, let's now that I have you on the phone, let's just talk a little bit about what's happened this week in national politics. I know you still follow those things. Today, this morning, articles of impeachment passed through the judiciary. Two counts, one obstruction of Congress, the other abuse of power. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi has been they made a deal on the USMCA. They have passed other legislation that won't go anywhere, but the Progressive Caucus got a big win on this drug prescription bill. There's so much news out there this week. Obviously, you're spending your time running for office, but what has struck you this week in terms of when we look down the future, when we look to 2020, what's going to be most important from this week?
So, first of all, I'm obviously glad that they're going down the impeachment path. We've been pushing them in that direction all along. I wish they'd done more articles of impeachment. I don't know why they never talk about his other crimes, but I'm past it for now. Let's go. Let's win on these, okay? So go to the Senate, fight as hard as you possibly can to convict him. Put political pressure on the Republicans. And have them do polling in their home states for the senators that are up for re-election. Do enough damage to them that they'll actually consider convicting him. It is definitely possible if they fight hard enough. So overall, as usual, bunch of concerns about their more mild-mannered strategy, but I'll take it. Let's go forward, okay? So on the legislation stuff, that's a debacle. Total capitulation on USMCA. Well, no, that's not fair. Less of a capitulation on USMCA, although terrible timing and not the right path to go. It only pales in comparison to the total capitulation on the defense bill.
Right.
And then the drug price bill is unbelievable. It's unreal. So, look, the reason I get so passionate on the show about this stuff is the same reason I'm running. Because let's talk about the drug bill for 1 second. The Democrats all win their elections based on saying we're going to negotiate drug prices for you. They get in, and progressives say, okay, great, we're going to negotiate all the drug prices, right? And they go, no. What? That's what we all promised. No, we're only going to negotiate 25 of them. 25? What the hell are you talking about? They're like, okay, fine, you progressives are complaining too much. We'll make it 35 over the course of the next 10 years. This is a joke. It's a total joke. But it's not just that. It's a Trojan horse. What it does is it blocks you from negotiating all the thousands of other drug prices
right.
for 10 years. And it's done on behalf of the drug industry, not to fight the drug industry. And so the progressives are now finally beginning to push back on that, and they might not be able to pass that bill. If progressives back down on that, that's it. It's total over. It's surrender, and we'll never pass any progressive priorities. If they defeat that bill, well, then we're on the board. And we're now having a conversation about which way is the Democratic Party going to go. And if I was in Congress right now, I'd start putting up placards of all of the drug company money that fellow Democrats have taken.
Right.
So can you see why they're going to spend millions against me? But that's the reality. That's why they're doing that. And it's gross. It's sick. And as strong as the progressives are right now in Congress, even they're not fully calling it out. I will call them out by name, by donation, because that's the corruption that's literally, especially in the case of drug prices, literally killing this country.
You know, I'm struck by the threat that that folks like you represent, frankly. And by you, I mean specifically, you know, people who come in with a funding source that is not their own billions of dollars that they, you know, raised in business, because we know what values they're going to bring to the table at that point. But, you know, AOC is the number one fundraiser last quarter in the House, and that scares the hell out of Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and the entire crew. They are very nervous about that, because that has been their one form of control. If you don't if you don't allow us to whip you on this bill or whatever it is, you're not going to get the committee seats that you need to raise money. And when that essential leash or, you know, cattle prod is gone, they get very, very nervous. I mean, I imagine they're as nervous about your ability to raise this money as anything else, because it just says we cannot control this guy.
But Sam, you hit the nail on the head, and they can't control me more than even the strongest progressives in Congress now, because if I win, I will probably raise a ton of money because of that extra attention. And when I do, I'm going to give it to other progressives who are challenging incumbents. No ands, no ifs, no buts. I don't give a damn about corrupt colleagues who say, no, I have to protect my purple seat district by taking more corporate bribes. Well, in that scenario, I just wanted a purple district. So it turns out you don't have to do that. You're choosing to do that. And if you're voting yes, Medicare for All and all of our priorities, well, you're not my colleague, you're not my ally, you're not my teammate, and you're not going to gaslight me into believing that. So I will raise money, I will give it to upstart progressive candidates, I will back all of them and not give a damn about incumbents. So again, God help him if I get in there, jank2020.com. Sam, we have got to change the national conversation. If we don't talk about the bribes, then we're not at all covering politics. Let's just go cover sports or entertainment or something. Because that, if you're not talking about the bribes, you're not talking about the driving force for every vote in Congress. And if I win, they're not going to be able to avoid that national conversation.
What do you do to fight back? You know, it's one thing that you have this ability to raise funds from across the country. You have fans across the country, outside the country. Obviously, you can't take foreign money. But what do you do to deal, like, in that district? How do you fight back against the L.A. Times writing a piece like that? I mean, what's at your disposal to push back on that type of sort of like mass media attack?
So, well, that's what we're in the middle of deciding here, Sam. And part of it is good folks telling you with wonderful folks with good, honest opinions is saying, basically, just continue to apologize, right? Because that's the more standard way to go, right? But I'm not going to apologize for the David Duke interview. I'm just not. They're flat out lying about it. Literally, CNN owes me an apology. I'm not coming as the accused. I'm coming as the accuser. And then that's the second strategy, which I can't help myself anyway, because I can't help but tell you what I actually think. And CNN obviously did a hit job. There's no question about it. Anyone who reads the CNN or the LA Times article and that knows me would think, this is a totally different guy. I don't know who this guy is, right? But that's definitely not Cenk. I watch him 3 hours a day. I watch him every day. I've watched 1,000 hours of Cenk. That's not remotely Cenk, right? So, and most progressives, they steamroll because they don't have a media outlet. They don't have allies like you guys. They don't have a way of fighting back. And they're told so often, hide, hide, hide. I'm not going to hide. I'm going to counterpunch. I'm going to go on every show like yours, Sam, I'm going to shout it from the rooftops. It's the goddamn bribery, okay? So now, in terms of what else you do in the district, all my candidates, my opponents, are hiding from the press. They never do press interviews. No one has ever asked Christy Smith a policy question. Isn't that amazing? Mm. In this entire campaign so far, not one policy question to my opponent. Not one. It's stunning. It's amazing. And she's hiding from all the press. Me, I'm going head in, okay? I'm going to make my case to the actual voters. I'm all over the local media as well as fighting back on the national media. But even more importantly, that's why when I say jank2020.com, if you can donate, it makes all the difference. But also, if you can volunteer from anywhere. You can do phone banking. And if you're near the district, or especially if you're in the district, come volunteer. And I've got hundreds of volunteers already that are in the district. And 90% of them have never been involved in politics before, and they're coming out for me because it's a real shot at real change, big change. So we're going to go knock on doors. We're going to go call people. My opponents aren't going to have volunteer armies. They have corporate armies, right? So we've got people. I'm going to hit them with all the real people that live in that district and the real progressives who fight for this all throughout the country, and tell people the real message. And I'll say it's the corporate contributions that are poisoning every issue in the district. And they'll say, no, corporate contributions are wonderful, are meant to help you. Let's see who wins.
Well, it's jank2020.com. I'm not sure if you're aware of that website, Jank. And it will send an incredible message across the country. I mean, they will feel it. And it's at a time, too, where I think, you know, there is an ascendant attempt by members of Congress to embolden and strengthen progressives. And I think that you would undoubtedly do that there. The attacks, frankly, I got to be honest with you. I woke up this morning and I saw that piece and I was like, oh, my God, they are really, really afraid of you. You know, from across the country, it's hard to sort of tell. But when you see something like that, that is a huge indication that they are very concerned about your ability to do this. And frankly, I got to tell you, they did it too early. They made a mistake, I think. I think that's a sign of panic, that they feel they got to roll this out now. This is usually something that they would drop, you know, 2 weeks out from the election. But now you have the opportunity to you've gained more name recognition. Now you have the ability to talk to people in that district and tell them what's what. There are literally millions of basically character witnesses of you across the country, and not most people have that. So you know, good luck, and keep us updated. And thanks for coming on today.
All right. Thank you, Sam. I really appreciate it. Guys, let's all unite. The fight's on the 25th. So you got to go to jank2020.com. Even if you make one call or give $1, it still makes a huge difference. I'll take it one at a time if that's what it takes. We've got to win this race. If I lose this race because of all the smears and all the attacks and all the Democratic operatives, then they'll get to go, ha ha, you see that? You should never fight for real change. We knew it. The establishment candidate that took the corporate money won, and that's what you have to do. Everybody take corporate money. Don't do like Cenk did. So whether we like it or not, this is everything.
Indeed. Cenk Uygur, thanks again for your time. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Sam.
Bye-bye. Cenk Uygur, folks. Really, I mean, really is stunning. When you look at that Times article and when you look at the David Duke thing, the way that they cut it up just when Cenk is ending the interview and David Duke goes, "You're brave." And Cenk's like, "Great." They're very nervous.
The LA Times giveth and the LA Times taketh away.
I guesseth. They really do seem nervous about Cenk in that district. And, you know, the idea that there's some concern from the Democratic establishment about him being a carpetbagger. He lives an hour away, maybe, from that district, which is nothing. And, you know, you're talking about California. We had a senator in New York State for a while, who she had never lived in New York, moved in. 6 months later, she was a senator. And she went on to do some great things.
She sounds great. We should go to Kindler. all worked out.
All worked out well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Andy Kindler. One of the things that we're going to be doing, of course, on this casual Friday, as I sit here in my soft collared shirt and hoodie, is look back on the life of Danny Aiello through my very, very narrow lens of the two things that I care about that he did. I know he was in Do the Right Thing, and that was great, but sorry. A lot of people could have played that role, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it may have helped Spike Lee to have a known actor that may have helped the production. I mean, in terms of like what it went, and I'm not denigrating the performance. The performance was great. But those aren't the things that I think America and the world is going to remember Danny Aiello for. For me, it's always going to be Papa Wants the Best for You and the opening scene, the opening montage from Della Ventura. So we will talk to Andy Kindler about that and about he wants to go into Collins. Doug Collins got very, very mad last night when they broke up. Because he was so psyched. Like, Doug Collins, you know, well, let's talk to Andy Kindler. But Doug Collins, let me put it this way. Doug Collins is the type of politician who's like, I worked on this for 10 days. It's like a funny quip about doing this at night. And I'm going to drop this bomb. And then Jerry Nadler says, we're doing this tomorrow. And Collins is like, God damn it. I spent all my time trying to, like, if you do it at night, it ain't right. That's what I came up with. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Andy Kindler.
Crazy, amazing, turn
That, of course, was Gold Standard by Prince, which is, of course, the song we pick out for the interludes when we know we have the next guest on, because he is the gold standard. And let's play his other intro song.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, Andy believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song, Andy Kindler.
Yes, the gold standard.
Oh, I thought you said I'm the juice. I thought you said I'm the Jew standard.
The Jewish gold standard. The gold Jew standard.
But Ron Paul, okay, as they say in cable news, regardless of what you think about the Jews, regardless of what you think about civil rights, Ron Paul was onto something with that, going back to the gold standard. Am I right? Who's with me? Who's with me on this?
Everybody, of course. Everyone is
right?
with you on everything. Andy Kindler, I've got a bone to pick with you, buddy.
No. Yeah. No, let's not. Oh.
I'm sorry to start off that way. But every year, you come to New York and perform literally blocks away from me. And I'm in Massachusetts for Thanksgiving. And you never, ever, ever do a Sunday night show. And
I do, but it was in Philadelphia.
Well, I know. I saw that, but I can't go down to Philadelphia.
I like the way... That is a weak excuse coming out of the strong family Thanksgiving excuse, right?
Right. Well, I mean, I can't go from Worcester to Philly. It's just too far.
True. That's just crazy, right?
What's going on with that, Andy? Why do you keep doing that?
Well, I don't know. The thing is that neither one of us are Columbo, but I line it up directly with the Thanksgiving holiday.
But why do you got to go to Philly on Sunday? Why don't you stay and do one more show in New York on Sunday?
Oh, that is a very interesting way to embarrass myself, I think. a second poorly attended evening.
Oh, so you only want to do one?
No, I would do it.
All right. Good. I'm glad we resolved that. Bye-bye.
Thank you. What's in it for me?
Look.
I'm sorry. I guess I charge at the door for it.
I want to. We have a lot of stuff to get to today. I know that we've got. We're gonna play that Mad Doug Collins stuff that you wanted to play. Maybe we'll get time for Dennis Miller and.
I find it amazing. I find it. That's my favorite patter. That's my favorite hook line. I find it amazing.
He's mad. He is so mad. Let's start with that, shall we? Here is Doug Collins. This, as you know, Andy, last night, I imagine you watched the whole thing last night, right?
Oh, I did. I mean, I did have to do a couple of errands or something, but I was very angry about it.
And last night...
I mean, having to miss a couple of minutes, yeah.
Just before the vote, Jerry Nadler says, we're gonna recess until tomorrow morning.
This is so great.
We shouldn't have this vote before, in the middle of the night. So Doug Collins is mad, and he gets out and he goes out in front of the to do a press conference at, like, I don't know. This must have been at, what, 11:30 at night or something? 11:19. And here he is. He's mad.
And I've been around a lot of political campaigns. I've been around a lot of things that would make you think. But in the midst of impeachment, the chairman just ambushed the entire committee, did not have any consultation with the ranking member, telling us we're going to have votes at 10 a.m. in the morning. I guess they didn't think enough today of threading their very paper-thin impeachment process for over 12 to 14 hours was enough. So tonight, without consulting the ranking member, without consulting anyone, schedules of anybody be put out there. We're scheduling this at 10 a.m. in the morning. I don't know. The integrity level of this committee has been, the chairman's integrity is gone. His staff is gone. This was the most Bush League thing I have seen forever. And if the American people wondered about this impeachment anymore, they don't have to wonder anymore. They saw what happened right here tonight, because this committee is more concerned about getting on TV in the morning than it was finishing its job tonight and letting the members go home. Words cannot describe how inappropriate this was, how I have been saying for the whole year how this committee is just simply rumshotting the rules of this House, and this proves it tonight. They do not care about rules.
Words
they have
cannot
one
describe,
thing, their
but
hatred
I'll
of Donald Trump,
words.
And this showed it tonight because they want to shine in these cameras, get prettied up, and then vote and make it all happen. This was the most, I'm just beyond words at this point, but it shows their lack of integrity in this process and the lack of case that they have. For them to actually come out here to defend this is the most ludicrous thing I've ever seen.
Now, Andy, I know you are not a legislative expert, but how
I'm
does
just a simple country lawyer, as you know,
how is holding the vote the next day at 10 a.m. Yeah. as opposed to literally like midnight on a Thursday? How is that an example that your case is weak? How is that an example that you're afraid to take that vote?
Well, yeah, just the idea that the next morning everybody's going to be, you know, prime time. It's prime time at 10 a.m. in the morning. But I just realized that he does sound like he wants to be Andy Griffith, but he is as if, like, the face in the crowd character was Andy Griffith.
Yes. Now, for our youngins here, Andy Griffith, usually when you think of Andy Griffith, you think of the Andy Griffith Show, where he was a nice country a sheriff. And, you know, he didn't have to deal with much crime. And it was just like Aunt Mabel was there and he had a.
And goofy... you loved his accent. You loved his. That's the thing. People think I'm making fun of the South when I say, you know, like his voice sounds like a drawl on a chalkboard. But I like a good Southern accent. That's Andy Griffith. That's what he wishes. He would like to be folksy.
Exactly. But then he did a movie, Faces in the Crowd, which is basically like, I don't know, knocking off Donald Trump in many respects, or Glenn Beck. And,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then his Southern accent is a little bit more evil in it. And that is sort of Doug Collins-y. Here he is. Collins is not done. He claims he was done, but he was not done. He was mad. Just like 3 minutes later, which is weird because he said he was, I'm done. I'm speechless. I guess he wasn't.
I have to change my flight. I can't talk any longer. I have to go change my goddamn flight.
And the chairman have no comment and just sort of go, huh? This is the problem. This is why people don't like us. This crap like this is why people are having such a terrible opinion of Congress. What Chairman Nadler just did and his staff and the rest of the majority who sat there quietly and said nothing, this is why they don't like us, because they know it's all about games. They know it's all about these TV screens. And the chairman.
And so, again, I want to remind people what he's complaining about is that they took a recess at 11:15 at night to hold the vote to impeach the president during the day when people could actually be aware of it. And that's why people hate Congress, because they're so transparent and they're doing it in front of people.
Nadler really did an amazing job, though, because it would be like Nadler just decided, like, okay, are you striking the last word? Yeah, please proceed. Please. You know, he gave him all the rope till they went so late, you know?
Yes, it's true. And they were mad because I think they must have been planning to really push the idea that this was done in the dead of night.
Right. And where are they going to the Battle of the Bulge? Or who's going to the battle? Who's flying off? The Republicans wanted to fly off to some kind of World War II event.
I wasn't aware of that. But I guess they're really mad. Like they have events they want to attend to that have, you know, as opposed to deal with the impeachment vote. Because that happens, you know, I don't know, once every 30 or 40 years in the modern era. Really, I guess once every 75 years in terms of our history.
But it didn't bother him making fun of that Hunter Biden's crack use was brought up. That didn't upset.
Yeah, Matt Gaetz was pretty classy. Matt Gaetz.
Yeah, that didn't bother Doug Collins. Who was an insult to the name Doug Collins, who I believe was a very good basketball player.
He was and a good announcer, too.
Bulls coach,
and a good
too,
announcer.
Back in the Jordan era, if I'm not mistaken.
He should be able to call himself Doug Collins.
I agree.
Well, maybe you can get something going with that, Andy. All right. But Andy, let's get to the real tragedy of today.
Okay.
I don't know where you were when you first heard Danny Aiello's response to the Madonna video he was in. I know where I was, but
I am so, is this a Buddy Rich level great?
This is pretty great stuff. Now you're aware that Danny Aiello has passed away.
I did, but only because you texted me that we may have to do a Danny Aiello retrospective, and I just woke up, so it took me 15, 20, 25 minutes to figure out what that meant.
Well, you know, people know Danny Aiello for his performance in Do the Right Thing.
Happens to be a great performance, no credit to his actual personality as a human.
Right. And and I think he also...
Hitler was a great actor.
I think he did Streetcar on Broadway, I think, at one point. I mean, he had a wonderful career. And but what people overlook is he was a deeply, deeply caring, moral father. And when he performed in Madonna's video, Papa Don't Preach, he played the father. And I think that stayed with him for a long time. When Madonna was saying that, you know, don't preach to me, I'm having my baby. And then apparently took off because she couldn't handle her dad. Danny Aiello couldn't let it stand, ladies and gentlemen. We all do
things. This will not stand.
I'm sure, Andy, you've done things as an actor that you later look back upon and have regretted and thought, is there a way for me to correct that? Like when you did Wizards of Waverly Place. Don't play that because it's the sound.
I enjoy that. Is as insulting as you continually showing me in that terrible sweater vest.
Wizards of Waverly Place.
Not Waverly. Waverly.
Waverly. I'm sure there were things that you did there that you thought were horribly immoral. And
I can't think of any acting that I've done that wasn't embarrassing and humiliating, including when I follow along slowly and repeat the words silently that the other person is saying.
Right, exactly. You, to keep your place in the script, you need to actually mouth their words.
Move.
Well, Danny Aiello experienced this when he was part of Papa Don't Preach. So he waited and he waited until the time was right. And people have to understand something about this. This was made in an era without digital video. This was shot on film. And to do a film production in New York City, not cheap. Now, he had friends. I'm sure he called in a lot of favors. The editorial work on this is an expensive production. And it is, and I think he spent his own money on it to the extent there was. And it's Danny Aiello in his music video, Papa Wants the Best for You, which is his response to the role that he played in the Madonna video. Andy, listen to this. Here it comes. It's across the river, Staten Island. He's on a construction site where this seems to be a lot. Oh, and then, of course, they're playing the football in between the construction work. No.
Papa's not preaching, just trying to show you the right from the wrong. I'm only reaching out for the things that will help you along before your mama passed away.
Now that looks like his grandma.
Find your lady.
Papa just Now he can't find her, so now he's going around and asking people on the street, have you seen my daughter?
Like a mashup of Desperately Seeking Susan.
Yeah. Oh, there's the cop over here. Let me show you a picture. Seen her? Wait a second, is that her? He's got a slow-mo.
Slow-mo run.
Yeah. Lee, he runs fast and then pulls up. Not her.
He could have just called to her, but...
Why are you staring at me? My heart is breaking. No, it will only last. I don't know why they're not wearing protective gear while they're doing that. They should be
wearing
helmets.
Not a union job.
That is not. And now he's pissed because he's watching somebody walk with somebody else. So he's going to use that pickaxe more. There's a rich guy who's driving a caddy who's got a family. Son of a gun. There's a little bit of class consciousness in this, but it's hard to tell. So he goes to the local club. There's only one at that time in New York. And sees if he can find... And, of course, you go into a dark club like that, you're going to get into a fight. He's going around looking for the girls. And some guy's like, hey, what are you doing? And he runs off. Well, come back around here, old man. Harassing the... And he's mad. So he goes down to the gym.
Not very good form on that.
Not good
punchy
form.
Man.
And then he... Feels bad.
It's his only friend.
He feels bad that he hurt the bag. Oh. And then he goes in prayer. It's like he always is wearing the same thing, too. Oh, he's singing to Jesus.
This is good.
This is the classic
Chrysler Building Empire State Building.
Yeah.
It's a real production here.
Yeah. Well, watch this. They brought out a tracking shot.
Is this a pro-abortion video?
I hope so.
It is, right?
Yeah.
He hates life.
There's the mom. She's up there floating in the moon, like at the moon.
Smiling down from heaven saying, suck the sucker out.
Why is he turning around?
They just did the
360. Baby will interfere with school.
Who's that? Oh my God. You know who that was? He has a good voice, though. I will have to admit to the fact that he has a very, very fetching voice.
He's, you know, at the end, he's like, should we just do the full 360? Oh, wait a second! A hand came out.
Who is it?
I'll pause it for 1 second. Okay, wait, go back. That hand does not look like the hand of, like, you know, his daughter. It looks like...
No, it's the ghost of Christmas future.
Yeah, it's a weird thing.
It's a disembodied claw hand, really.
It's unclear to me what that's supposed to represent.
I get it, because remember in the original video when Paul McCartney was dead or something?
No, I don't remember that.
Sorry.
There it is.
Sorry for the Paul McCartney reference.
The thing that was amazing about this to me when I first saw it...
I do not accept your apology.
...is that at that time, the difference, like you never saw something that crazy with that level of production value back then.
I never realized his hair. He did have a decent. You did say to me he had a decent hairline. You made that argument many times.
Many times I've made that argument, of course. But there's Danny Aiello in the Papa Don't Preach. Now I became obsessed with Danny Aiello around this time. It was the early mid '90s, and he. What is this clip? Is this clip of him on? Do we have the?
I have Del.
Okay, we'll play the Della Ventura. I went through a dark period in my life, Andy, which I don't know that you're aware of, where I was, you know, doing too many illicit substances and drinking too much at a dark period in my life. I think it was around this time, You know, I think at one point I felt I think I was diagnosed with having seasonal affective disorder. And on every Thursday night for about eight or, you know, a season and a half, Della Ventura played. And that was a show where Danny Aiello was.
I have never even heard of the show.
It was on CBS. He was like a equalizer, like a private eye who's going to help out, you know, different things.
It sounds like a pizza place on Ventura Boulevard.
Yeah, that would have been a perfect thing, but it's not.
And, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Here is the opening, just so folks get a notion of it, because really it was about the opening. And what I would do is I would every Tuesday or Thursday night when this was on, I can't remember, I would make my own pasta della Ventura, which was, of course, a variation of a puttanesca. And I think, Ross Broccoli would come over and we would just get blind drunk and watch the show. And so here is the opening. Yeah, he's got a badge.
A lot of shadow boxing.
Yeah, the shadow boxing is the best. That I was born to cry. Here we go. This is a shot that kills it. Right there. He puts the glasses on and walks away. From the Yeah, boom. There you go. Della Ventura. I auditioned for the show. I got a call from a casting agent. It was like, look, Sam, I know you're not going to want to do this, but I'm casting Della Ventura. And I was like, oh, my God, please. Please let me come in. there it is. So Danny Aiello, also, when they were canceling the show, he called in every favor he could. He went on Letterman's show. He went on Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose had him on, and he was talking about how the show can't be canceled. Charlie Rose and Letterman both did the thing like, well, I haven't seen the show yet. But I hear it's really good.
Right.
And at one point, Della Ventura, Danny Aiello was on, I think it was on Letterman, saying that he should have gotten the role of the Godfather. That Marlon Brando was okay, but really, we all know who the real Godfather should have been.
Bold.
Well, he starts out that scene, like Della Ventura, like, he looks like James Bond or something. That's how he sees himself.
Yes.
Debonair, suave, man about town.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And I think his son actually was the director of that show, if I'm not mistaken.
And I've heard nothing but horrible things. I mean, allegedly, he's not. His character in Do the Right Thing is not nearly as right-wing as he is.
Yes. I didn't hear the greatest.
He hated being that soft.
Yeah, exactly. I've got to really downplay myself to fit into this Do the Right Thing thing. All right. Now, listen, we've got let's get into the wheelhouse, shall we, Andy? I don't know.
You mean Dennis Miller? He's not even trending. Dennis Miller has nothing, literally nothing trending.
Well, how good of friends are you with David Spade?
I will only say that I have two short stories. He was, when I did the HBO Young Comedian special in Arizona, he was there and he was very supportive. But my favorite story is that I saw him in Studio City and he was walking into a restaurant and I yelled out, David, David, David Spade. And I didn't realize that he was trained to not look no matter when he hears someone going, David, he's not gonna look. Huh. And so I was like, oh my God, there's a person that's, some people actually have to avoid being buttonholed.
Yeah. Well, here is Dave. So he's got a late night talk show and he had he had Dennis Miller on, and I guess he drops a few names here on this clip. Here we go.
Hey, I was watching the warm-up thing.
Cool.
And I remember when we did, I was the host of the Young Comedian special.
Oh, yeah.
You were like a little, like, hip embryo. I didn't even know who you were. And we had the coolest cutaway in the history of comedy. Usually they go to the crowd. It's Todd Bridges or Joanne Worley. Remember, we had Bowie.
Bowie was in the audience watching. Yeah, was he your friend?
Yeah, it's just so funny. They tilt into the crowd, and you see those two different eyes, and you think, geez, that's David Bowie in the crowd.
He liked it, too.
Yeah, he loved you. Ooh. He loved you.
That long story was about Bowie being Dennis's friend. That was great.
If you're going to name drop, that one involves a big crane to drop.
Listen, Bowie's a monster. It made me actually more nervous that night.
Yeah.
That he was there watching.
Dennis is like, nice show. Hey, I knew Bowie.
Yeah.
So go f*** yourself, Dave.
Listen, I have to get to our crummy talk.
All right, go.
Former baseball star A-Rod.
We're on the topics now.
Yeah. Okay. It was supposed to be 10 minutes ago. Had his rental car broken into and thieves made off with a reported $500,000 worth of electronics and jewelry.
Does he say anything else?
How much is a new iPhone? No. What do we think of this?
You think this prick knows Bowie?
Oh, man.
Look at A-Rod. He just tried. I guess the vibe on him is he tries too hard. You just look at that. I mean, who's going out in the middle of the day? And why, when you look like that, are you still renting cars? Why don't you have a... You have a driver, you know, and you know when he goes to fill out the insurance waiver, instead of just AR, he puts A Rod in the initials it that way.
Why is this buying a car?
Why are they using the set of Comics Unleashed?
There it
Comics
is.
Unleashed, I says.
Well, it's sort of like what we do around here, right? Except for we only have one story that we keep going to over and over again, and that's Dennis Miller.
Well, I thought there wasn't anything out there, but look at he's keeping himself busy.
There is a feeling that Dennis tried to do like a comeback by not being political and then by being political again and then not being political. Now it's just
I think he gave up on everything now, right?
It sort of feels like that. And
you can't get in the basement with there's no get new basement episodes in my bathrobe with Dennis Miller. I guess I could put out a video as just as much as taking a nap.
There's also, we have no more Miller option, or what was it? The other Miller option, or the non-option?
Public nationalized Dennis Miller option.
In many respects, like, maybe we should think about hiring him just to go and do stuff so that you and I can talk about it.
Well, where's the new right-wing, hilarious right-wing comedians? The young, you know, like, who's the guy, Ben, what's the Ben guy who's, Ben Shapiro, but even funnier?
Is that possible?
Even more quick on his feet?
So Andy, since we have no more of those people, why don't you just tell us, like, what have you been up to these days? Are you getting in any type of Twitter fights? Are you able to, how are you dealing with this sort of onslaught of news?
Well, I'm very. I'm in therapy twice a week, and it's not a bit. Because if it was a bit, I would have said something funny by now. So I'm in therapy, and everyone's very depressed. So, like, my therapist is reminding me that everyone with a conscience, right now, it's very hard to, actually move around on your feet and breathe. When there's so much lying going on, you know, luckily I was able to fast forward through the GOP side of the panel, but when you don't, you got Louis Gohmert. I mean, Louis Gohmert is lying. Has there no shame? Is his asparagus not enjoyable? I mean, it's depressing. It's very, very depressing. I'm not doing well, in my act. Sam, I say, I hate Trump so much, I'd rather watch an episode of Dateline where a wife carves up her husband into a pumpkin, just to take the edge off.
Andy,
just to relax.
Andy, it feels like maybe you need to go to therapy 3 times a week.
Oh, my God. Whoa. This is like, that could have been the weakest insult comic roast
I'm saying that out of concern.
No, you should. You're right. I was trying to joke with you. You know, like I'm hurt. What's my go-to reaction is, oh, now you've hurt my feelings. Because I'm not good at insult humor.
It's the best he can do. Well, that actually genuinely hurts.
Oh, how about this? I wanted to know, we need to really stay on when this Golden Globes thing is going to happen. Maybe we should do a countdown to Ricky Gervais hosting his last Golden Globes.
Oh, right. Is that happening?
Yeah, I don't know when it happens, but is that soon? When's award season? It's January?
I think so. When is the Golden Globes? Oh. I didn't realize. Now, are you still going at it with him or what?
Every once in a while I do when I get bored. You see, I don't get into the same kind of Twitter as much, and anybody can see this. If they see my online Twitter behavior, they will see not only is there no uptick in career visibility or buzz, but the good part is I'm not getting into a lot of feuds. So it's like, it's just basically now I'm just another boring person.
There you go. You're just sort of like chilling a little bit. This is like the calm before the storm for you.
Yeah, I used to be an influencer, right? Then I was a disruptor, right? Right.
Right.
Then I was a counter espionage deconstructor. I was a Russian troll deconstructor.
Right.
Why do they call it Ukraine? All right, I'm sorry. I ran out of material right in the middle of that, whatever I was doing.
that was pretty good, though.
See me in the clubs.
You were one of those.
I was trying to do, I couldn't think of a, what do they call the thing? The motherboard? What's the thing that's supposed to be in Ukraine? The motherboard, the ground control, the original tapes? What do they call that?
The server?
The crowd, yeah, what do they call
CrowdStrike
it?
Server?
Yes, the CrowdStrike. I love whenever Trump says that word, you see a flash of recognition go through his eyes, like he kind of knows what that was. CrowdStrike, witch hunt.
Are you went through your whole bot hunting phase, right? Where you would try and identify Russian bots on Twitter?
No, I don't know if I've told you the story, but I didn't realize until after everybody found out that had happened, that I had been talking with Russian bots when I got blocked by Wikipedia leaks.
So wait,
blocked me.
WikiLeaks blocked me. And then you were arguing with bots?
Yeah, something named Curious. I didn't know it was a bot, but it was like a Curious Cat number 14. Whatever. So I'm arguing, regular argument. You suck. What are you talking about? Blah, 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 blah. And then I noticed that the English is their second language on one of the exchanges. And I was like, oh my God, I'm an idiot. I mean, I was an idiot before that exchange, but I realized I even had.
Now, what's happening on Thought Spiral these days?
Oh my God, you know, I tell people you better get there early to download it because otherwise you might freeze you might freeze iTunes.
Right. You don't want so many people are coming at the same time, right? Is that the problem?
A lot of people say, Andy, I can't get on because it's too much traffic. So I tell people, try to be first to download it. No, actually it's going very poorly. Nothing I do seems to be taken to the next level. I try to keep going for my wife's sake.
Oh my God.
No, it's really, I'm having fun doing it. But I don't know if you know this, Sam. I know that you make a lot of money with what you're doing, but there's not a lot of money like you promised me in podcasts.
Did I promise you a lot of money in podcasts?
Yes.
Did I? Sure?
You said you said you could do some really fun ad copy.
Yeah, I thought you would be killing it on the podcast circuit. Are you waiting around for the Bob's Burgers movie?
Oh, that's my general career here. That's my, they say, Andy, what's your philosophy? How do you do it? I wait around for Bob's Burgers to call. and people go, does that sound like a smart thing to do? Ask Sam Cedar and seven other of my friends if it's a smart thing to do. We have a breakfast every week based
exactly.
on trying to find out when the movie's coming out.
Exactly. Just waiting, hoping. My the latest I understand is it is happening. That's what it looks like.
But then I always go to the next step. Maybe I won't be in it. How
right,
about that?
Right. That's also what I am concerned about.
And now you now tell me, Sam, oh, there's no way you can, me and you, we're like, you know what? Why don't just you and I hold out?
Well, you know, exactly.
Like that.
You and I will hold out. Or you know what we could do is we could just produce our own rival show and movie.
And you know what? When you first say it, it sounds like it could alienate people. Well, let's think about that. Let's think about it.
But here's the thing. We probably couldn't get away with using our characters' names, but I would be like, you'd be, I don't know, Short or Lort or something like that instead of Mort. And I would
thanks
be
for going with Short.
Bugo or something like that. Or,
yeah.
Or, you know.
I love it. Jugo.
Right.
They cannot make a Bob's Burgers movie without Morty the Mortician. Don't worry, Andy. Hugo,
you know,
a bit of a marginal character.
Thank you for that.
How could you say Hugo is a marginal character? It was the fulcrum of the pilot, Hugo. Hugo was the fulcrum of the show.
A pretty long time ago.
It was a long time ago, the show.
That's a bad argument, Sam. That's a bad argument. You know, back before the show went on the air, all they talked about was me.
Things went a little downhill after the performance was actually released. But prior to that, it looked really good. In fact, that I would say that is the most consistent thing I experienced when I was in show business. Tremendous.
Oh, you were hilarious.
Tremendous excitement before anybody saw the product.
Right.
And then things sort of fizzled a little bit.
Well, I don't call it fizzling. I say it's like, you know, we don't want to be overexposed and we don't want to be associated too much. It's like Superman. It's like the Superman thing with the guy who played Superman, George Reeves.
Right.
We don't want to be in a George Reeves situation where two handsome Jews, we get overexposed.
Exactly.
On this animated project. People, if they see us in a regular sitcom, they go, that's an animated character. I don't believe it.
Right, exactly. What you're saying is exactly right. We don't want to be overexposed, and you don't want to
get pigeonholed. We're no sellouts.
Or pigeonholed.
Literally, we will not sell out.
Not yes, we're just sort of we'll rent out, but not sell out.
I thought you would make. I didn't think you were just the handsome version of me. You have a lot more things going on than that. But I thought of all the Jews in this crazy blue marble. I thought I would at least see you rocket to the stars. But you have, but just in your own way, right?
Right.
Am I right?
No,
me
exactly.
Too, right?
Yeah, we
so
both have.
I'm 70,
in our own
70,
way.
75,
in
right?
That way where the stars aren't necessarily up. They can be sideways down
on your bedroom ceiling.
Exactly.
You think the young kids want to watch a comic who's 30, 40? No, they want to see someone who's 60, 63, someone who looks like they might have health problems.
Right. A little
that
bit of,
kind of a thing.
A little bit of experience is what people want with their comedy.
I call it sadness. A little pathos.
Oh, geez. I think we're both.
Oh, my God.
We're both ready for vacation. Andy,
I always close weak. You know that, Sam. That's my philosophy.
Well,
they call me Andy Climactic.
Oh, that's a good one.
He had me till almost the end.
Oh, I am going to steal that and use it on all the Andys in my life.
Andy, this is the last week of live shows that we're doing in 2019. And when we next talk to you, it will be the next decade. And I hope that we can do this.
I can't believe that.
I know it. But I want to wish you a happy new year. You know, happy holidays in general. I don't know what you're celebrating these days or why you would be. And
I do Kwanzaa jokes.
Right.
And I celebrate Christianity.
There you go. And
I do. But I want to say, you guys really, I'm not just saying this, you helped get me through this year, which I think we all believe was a horribly dark year.
It was a dark year. But here's the good news. Next year is probably going to be a little darker.
And I'm telling you, I look forward to the fact that you guys helped get me through that, because you are like a light in a tunnel that is going to soon be radioactive and full of...
molten lava. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and full of poison gas.
Andy.
But seriously, folks, go get my CD and have a great...
Have a happy new year, Andy. Thank you so much.
I love you.
For,
I love
for
you
coming
guys.
On the show. I really.
I'm sorry I talked. I just want to say one more thing. I'm sorry that occasionally today I talked over, and I think it would be really funny if someone tried to say something and I talked over it.
Okay, we'll see you later.
Because I really think that's not me.
Yeah, no, I know. All right, we'll
good.
See.
I love you. Bye bye.
Love you too. Andy Kindler, ladies and gentlemen. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half. We got a lot more clips to play for you, a lot more stuff to talk about. Just remember, your support makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, check out the AM Quickie every morning, 4 or 5 minutes. You will know the news of the day that you need to know. And you can go and get a little more depth by listening to this show or other shows or whatever it is. amquickie.com. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. I think maybe they're still having their 30% sale. So check that out. Should be good. All right. Check out TMBS, Michael Brooks Show, patreon.com/TheMichaelBrooksShow. You can also find it on YouTube. Jamie, what's happening with the Antifada?
I'm so glad you asked. This week on the Antifada, we speak with Alex Vitale, the author of The End of Policing, which is out now on Verso Books, about the rotten history of the modern police state, the utter inadequacy of liberal reforms that have been tried on it, and what would need to happen to actually help fix these problems in the long run, as well as what regular people are doing all over the world to struggle against the carceral and police state, the recent FTP protests in New York, which Andy and myself were involved with, and what you can do to get involved. So check it out, folks. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Matt?
Yeah, Literary Hangover. Most recent episode is The Crucible by Arthur Miller. We talk about witches, Puritans, McCarthyism, and Marilyn Monroe. So check that out, folks.
Oh. Full boat. Quick break. Fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already. Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. Are you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.